Mystic Fix, a program for the whole being with Julia Gordon-Bramer on News Talk STL.
Welcome to Mystic Fix. I'm Julia Gordon-Bramer. This week's episode corresponds with the Death Tarot card. Usually, the Death card doesn't mean death, but rather transformation. It's a card of putting the old life behind you and going on into a new unknown place. And sometimes that's a little bit scary. As I record this, my good friend Suze Mondello is on the brink of death, in hospice. As an early supporter of Mystic Fix, she was gracious enough to spend some time with me on Zoom back on Valentine's Day, as she had just gone into hospice after an incredibly long battle with cancer. She has been on the decline since, but is still hanging in there. Realistically, by the time this show airs, she may be gone. So I'd like you to say a prayer for the gentle passing of my friend and hear some of her last recorded words.
I'm talking today to Suze Mondello, who is my friend. And Suze, I've known you probably since fall of 2019, right?
Yeah.
You came to me as a tarot client from a referral.
Yeah.
And at that time, you told me that you had stage 4 endometrial cancer. And these few years that I've known you have been such a journey. I have learned and I continue to learn so much from you. And the reason that I'm asking you to be in this show is because I think you have wisdom and certainly experience that most of us don't have and are very curious about. You are in hospice right now, and which pains me to say, and I have just been starting to even, as I told you on a recent visit, come to an understanding of what hospice even is. I thought initially that it meant just a couple days or even hours and you were gone, and it can be like a 6-month process or so. No one can quite believe that this is happening, because you are one of the most positive people I know. And I have never met anyone who was able to shift to, you know, such a getting the lesson and the optimistic stance and going for what you want and not what you don't want. Right beside me, I have the book that everyone has in spirituality, Louise Hay's Heal Your Body. And I was expressing to you how frustrating this book is to me now that I know you, because I do believe it probably works in some cases. I do believe that our body reflects some things going on the inner, but you don't fit this mold. I want to say that that you're such a model to me of really living in spirit despite the body crumbling. I believe that, you know, these are just skin vehicles that we've got. And like any vehicle, they break down eventually. No car runs forever, right?
Wow, you put a lot in there, and I'll do my best to touch on some of them. In regards to Louise Hay and Esther Hicks and Dr. Dyer, and, you know, there's so many, Wayne Dyer, there's so many out there that talked about the power of positive thinking, Joe Dispenza. And I do think there's validity to that. There's definite research that shows if you have a positive attitude going into something, the outcome is likely to be much different than if you have a negative perspective going into something. How do you prove that? There are, you know, qualitative and quantitative ways of measuring that, or just merely how you feel after an experience. I think it's really important to set intentions. One of the individuals I've been gifted to work with is Michael Lerner. He is by far one of the most outstanding individuals I've met in my life. And through him, I've met many others. Over 40 years ago, he started doing research on how to manage cancer integratively, not just with allopathic and traditional conventional medicine, but he went through country after country and started looking at how to manage cancer in different realms. Chinese, German, the U.S. And positivity, there was a research study that was done where in a hospital they had one individual in a room who had stage 4 cancer. I don't know the specifics. And another patient in another room who had stage 4 cancer. And they, over time, did this research study where they had people pray from all different religions. One prayed for the patient in room A, and none prayed for the patient in group B. They received the exact same protocol, exact same food, exact same interactions. And the person in group A did very well. They recovered faster. They had better outcomes. So yes, is there something to prayer and healing energy? No question. I've lived it. I've experienced it. I have had people from so many different religions ask me if I mind if they pray for me. And I will say, please, please pray for me, because it's that energy that I believe in. It's that incredible positive energy. Is that energy enough to heal? Maybe. In some instances, there are records of where people have healed through positive energy. Is it true? I'd like to believe it is. Is that the same for all of us? Like anything, we're all built bio-individually, meaning our insides, our outsides, our mind, body, spirit. There's nothing about each of us that makes us exactly the same. Even if we're twins and have a lot of the same genetics, there's still so much that keep us different from each other. But I do believe positive healing is possible. I do believe having a positive attitude has helped keep me alive. There's no doubt. I also know when I was first diagnosed with cancer, I was the first person in my family. And so I was naive what the heck this thing was and what it meant. But I treated it more like it was pneumonia or a really bad flu, and I just had to overcome it. I did not understand how it can take down the body and how there are different forms of cancer that can take down the body in different ways. I think you and I were talking yesterday, just because I have endometrial cancer, and if it spreads to my lungs, that doesn't mean I have lung cancer. That means I have endometrial cells that have spread to my lungs. I do not have lung cancer. And so what's confusing in society is people think, well, just give them lung drugs, give them drugs that'll help treat lung cancer, and that'll make them fine. Unfortunately, that's not how the body works. Mm-hmm. So what I want to bring around to you is all my positive thinking in my instance has not to this point been able to manage the power of what the cancer does to the body, how smart it is, how it replicates normal cells and tricks the body and then infiltrates and then takes over the body. And in some instances, people are fortunate to have a form of treatment that can help control that. And some can have that under maintenance dose for years, and some can go into remission for decades, and some can get cancer and be gone in 3 weeks. It's just indescribable how it happens. There are individuals called death doulas. There are birth doulas, and a birth doula is someone who will help you bring a child into the world. In some parts of the country, it's very controversial. In other parts of the country, it is a given. You will have a birth doula. Same with death doulas. In some parts of the country, they are welcomed and expected as part of the death process. In other parts of the country, they are forbidden or taboo or not even talked about. And basically what a death doula does is talks to you about the hard stuff. They may be spiritual. They don't have necessarily medical training. They may be a doctor that decided to become a death doula. They're just someone who is committed 100% to stay by your side through all of the process as you pass on from the earth. Mm-hmm. I have looked into death doulas. I haven't found one. I haven't necessarily chosen that path. I still do a lot of integrative medicine. Acupuncture has been significant for me. When I think about spirituality, a lot of people say, well, what about meditating? Do you meditate? I think I've meditated most of my life, and I had one of the most incredible role models, which is my mother. As a child, I remember getting up and going downstairs, and she'd be sitting in this big wingback chair, sipping her cup of coffee, doing her morning prayers, and praying and grounding and intending her day. And that influenced me hugely. I meditate a lot. I quiet a lot. I listen a lot. I think there's a lot more to be heard when you're quiet than to be heard when there's a room full of people talking. It's just been my experience. And through that, I've learned how to follow my gut, which is, I guess, a form of spirituality.
Is there any beauty in this that you could not have possibly understood at a younger, healthier age? I don't know if that's
Yeah,
too much
all of
to
it.
ask.
Cancers. No. Cancer's ironically been a gift. It's helped me understand who I am, what matters. It's given me the gift of how important gratitude is, how important curiosity, how important respect for myself, respect for another, how important love for myself, we love for another. If a person cannot love themselves, they can't fully love another. And I've learned that when we love ourselves, it's very difficult to be unkind and rude to another human being because you have self-love and self-respect. There's no reason to have a dialogue that is unkind or rude. It doesn't mean hard conversations aren't had. It just means the angle at which they are approached is very different.
With
And I think
respect.
that's really hard for a lot of people to understand until you either choose to take that. It's hard to understand that unless you choose that. And I also think life is one choice after another. You choose how you're going to treat each other. I choose how I'm going to behave in a situation. I choose what I'm going to do for a living. I choose how I'm going to interact with someone. Those are all choices. Those aren't guns to my head. Those are choices. And we are very fortunate being in the United States. I don't like to use the word privilege, but man, we have so many choices in everything that we do every day that other people can't even dream or imagine. We have so many choices. We are so blessed. On our worst day, we are so blessed. And so I think, have I learned a lot? Oh my God, yes. What gets me through it is when I focus on what matters most. And for me, that may be very different than you. For me, that's my health. It's my close relationships. It's how I take care of my body. It's how I take care of those I love. It's how I take care of the earth that I love. And when I'm out of alignment with the things that matter most, I'm out of alignment. My body's out of alignment. The way I interact with people is out of alignment. My fear is out of alignment. But when I focus on what matters most, and that can shift, not dramatically, what matters most to me is pretty much what's been the same since I was a child. It's just when I get too far away from it is when I lose my way.
Yeah. Wow.
So, am I afraid of death? Nope. Was I when I first was diagnosed? Heck yeah. It was because, back to your earlier point about these are just vessels. These are our vehicles that get us through this lifetime. It's really our soul that will transcend this. And
Right.
as painful, as life-shattering, as rude, as despicable it has been for me. Some people die in a car accident and don't have time to think through anything, don't have time to have conversations, don't have time to pause on what's really important, to say I love you, to dance, to laugh, to eat their favorite foods. With cancer, I have the choice to do those things, provided I can. There have been times where I can't eat and I can't physically stand, but there are times where I can, and I feel like I have the choice on how I'm going to live each day when I wake up. And people will say to me, well, I could die in a car wreck today. And I'm like, great. Does that impact the choices you make? Does that impact the way you talk to people? Does that impact how you live your life, what you do? For me, it has impacted those things. And I've been very grateful for the people who have stood by me, my company who stood by me, my friends who have stood by me. I think some people have had to move on because cancer can be too scary and they just can't handle it. And at first I took it personally, and now I'm like, I understand. I'm okay. If you need to move on, I'm okay, because I thrive with positive energy. I don't do so well with negative energy. And I remember one day my doctor saying, the first time I heard it say it to me, cancer loves drama. Cancer loves fear. Cancer loves anger. Cancer hates love. Cancer hates joy. Cancer hates hope. And it's just the opposite. So I realized, he said, so go out there and be as happy as you can be, because you're fighting cancer that way. Go out there and do the things that you can to the best of your ability while you still can, because cancer hates that. But if you want to be in drama, and if you want to fight and you want to argue, cancer will eat you alive. It'll grow. It'll multiply. And I'm like, huh. And I have found, when I have had really rough moments, if I don't get my head on straight and gear myself and straighten myself quickly, the cancer will take over quickly. And it will, woof, the pain will come on with a vengeance. I find that when I go through tough situations and I don't necessarily know how to handle them, if I learn how to have patience and kindness, the pain isn't as deep.
Wow. So. Wow. Well, Suze, you amaze me. And clearly you've been doing something right, because you were only supposed to have a few months to live when I met you 3 years ago. But yeah, you know, I think it should be noted, you kind of touched base on it, that you're working with Dr. Michael Lerner, and into your last days, you're really crusading for patients' rights, right? You're an advocate for patients going through this. And that's so meaningful. And
yeah,
you know, if anybody is going through such an awful thing for a reason, I mean, I can see the blessings that you're creating through this terrible, I mean, I hate to see it happen, but you're paving the way to make it better for others. And that's an incredible gift to the world. And so I just want to say thank you, and I love you, and I am your friend beyond the end, because I don't believe there's an end.
We'll be together. No, whatever plane or whatever aura, area, whatever it is, we will be together.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is Mystic Fix on News Talk STL 101.9 and 94.1.
You're listening to Mystic Fix with Julia Gordon Bramer on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Mystic Fix on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL. We just heard a moving conversation about life and death from my friend in hospice, Suze Mondello.
And now changing gears for a moment, we're going to be talking to author Peter Biebergall about communicating with the dead through technology. Welcome, Peter Biebergall. You've got a fascinating history and are author of a couple of books that are exactly right for our program, Mystic Fix. In 2015, you wrote Season of the Witch, How the Occult Saved Rock and Roll. Boy, I could do a whole show on that one alone. But I might be just a little bit more interested today in Strange Frequencies, the extraordinary story of the technological quest for the supernatural. Peter, you have studied at Harvard Divinity School, You write with an emphasis on speculative and the slightly fringe kind of stuff here. So I thought maybe you could talk especially about Strange Frequencies, but really about both books.
Well, I'm very interested in what I like to call the occult imagination. And for me, it's important to make a distinction. And when I use the word imagination, I don't mean making things up imagination. I mean really the foundation of the way in which all of human culture and thought arises from some interaction with some unknown idea that then we codify or we turn into art or music. What I'm not interested in, which I've been maybe criticized a little bit for by certain contingents, is I'm not interested in the truth or falsity of, say, occult or supernatural experiences. So I'm not interested in trying to prove anything, but I'm also not trying to debunk anything. What I'm just really interested in is how human beings and human culture have interacted with some phenomena.
Mm-hmm. You're an anthropologist in some sorts.
Yeah, but I would say that I still have a personal urgency in the sense of feeling that there's something of great value to our own consciousness in exploring these ideas. So maybe a little bit more of a journalist than an anthropologist insofar as I want to be on the ground. In anthropology is an interesting comparison because there's always that question of how far should the anthropologist insert themselves into the lives of the people that they're studying. Where for me, it's essential that I insert myself into those experiences.
Okay. So you've actually participated in some of these, like in Strange Frequencies, you talk about the use of technology to find immortality and these ghostly gadgets. And you've done some of this stuff yourself?
That's right. So I've built some of these radios that are intended to try to pick up spirits along the frequencies, the FM frequencies. I spent some time with the photographer Shannon Taggart, who was a spirit photographer of sorts, and went to seances with her to watch her as she attempted to take photographs of, say, ectoplasm. Mm-hmm. And so certainly, yes, I feel like it's important not necessarily to try to share in the experiences of believers or people who are having them, but to really try to understand it from being on the ground. I mean, Season of the Witch is an example because it's a book about rock and roll and the occult, but I love rock and roll.
Yeah.
And I was a kid who grew up really interested in trying to unpack the secret messages or symbols from the lyrics or the album covers.
Sure, and so as was I.
Exactly. So I am sympathetic with that feeling, that excitement of what the music, for example, can do for us in terms of opening up that side of our consciousness, which allows for the moment for these things to be real.
Getting back to Strange Frequencies for a moment, were you afraid at any time? Did any of these things convince you in any way that something was actually happening?
I'm not sure afraid is the right word. Maybe maybe enchanted is a better word.
Okay.
I prefer that. I think that I'm open to what I call enchanted experiences. You know, I've participated in certain religious rituals outside of, say, my own, you know, personal faith life. And I've been able to be enchanted by those experiences and feel the presence, say, of the noumenal, or, you know, the spirit, sure, the divine. But it doesn't require me to then convert or become now fully invested in something. It's about being able to share, I think, in a more human experience that we all can share, but maybe we, it just gets expressed in different ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. See, do you think everyone has these spiritual experiences on some level? Maybe I should ask, were you opened to something new through your scholarship?
Absolutely. And I, you know, I didn't always get it. You know, I attempted, you know, using those radios as an example, to try to engage with the spirit world, as it were, using those. And I didn't quite get what I was looking for there, or what I was hoping for. And I think what's interesting about that is, even though I didn't go into it necessarily believing or even disbelieving, I just went into it trying to be as neutral as I could, there was certainly a part of me that was excited about the idea of something actually happening, right?
Sure, sure.
And so when it doesn't, you still are a little bit disappointed.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've got a friend on Twitter who's always walking through graveyards with some sort of machine, and he's picking up messages, and he puts it on Twitter all the time. And I listen and I think, well, maybe it's saying that.
Right, exactly. <You know? laughs> Exactly. That's right. That's right. But what it's also interesting is what I found was, as I was doing those experiments, though, even more interesting than whether or not something actually happened was how I could sense that my own consciousness had changed, that I had entered into a particular state where there was possibility. And that's really exciting for me, because it's kind of a state of it's a liminal state. It's an ambiguous state. It's just full of possibility. And that itself is its own kind of enchantment, where you're just open to something that is otherworldly or beyond our normal sense experience. And I think I think we could do more of that without having to worry about forcing ourselves then into a box of believer, or if it doesn't happen, a box of skeptic.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's just sort of being open and challenging ourselves to be sometimes a little less reasonable all the time.
Interesting. Sure. In addition to photographing ghosts, which you mentioned, you talk about the legend of the golem and history of automata, if I'm saying that right.
Yeah, golem. Yep.
Yeah. And Can you address that a little bit? Like, what is a golem in today's world? Well, we all know of Frankenstein.
And that's right. I mean, the idea of the golem is, you know, this artificial being that is supposed to be imbued with some divine spirit, but is not fully human. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting rabbinical story of a rabbi who makes a golem, brings it to his companions, and they say, well, this is an interesting sort of a toy, but it doesn't speak, and the fact that it doesn't speak means it doesn't have the quality of what we would consider human. And that notion of speaking is very important, of course, because Adam, the first human, as it were, names the animals by speaking. Yeah. So there's a sense that language is that key. I think,
although
we're all struggling,
a mute person might be really upset by that.
Exactly. Exactly. Although they could communicate in other ways, right? Yeah. Language is, you know.
Okay, gotcha.
Writing, right, is still. So I think that poses an interesting problem for us when we think about something like the new artificial intelligence, things like ChatGPT and things, and how much is language or being able to communicate ideas, an indication or a measure of what it means to be human. Mm. And so there's the struggle, you know, so the idea of the golem becomes an interesting tool because, or an interesting example, because the rabbi is trying to, in some ways, imitate God in the form of creating something that is living, but the fact that it has those limitations is a way of saying that we can't do that. We can't act like God. We can only take that so far. So when you have something like artificial intelligence, does that kind of start to change some of the spiritual right. equation there? I would say personally, no. I think maybe even calling these things artificial intelligence is a little bit of a misnomer, because it's still just a lot of really fancy algorithms and data processing,
sure.
right?
Sure. We've all played with ChatGPT by now. It gets a lot of things wrong. I mean, I can put in some parameters and it'll completely misunderstand what I'm talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. That's right. But I do think that the golem represents an early example of where the industrious or creative spirit of human endeavors to build, to create, to think about how we could use tools to somehow build a bridge between us and the divine or the otherworldly is a very early example of that. And it just sort of continued on into the sense of even, yes, creating things like these clockwork mechanisms, like an automaton, which for many years or for a long period of time, people were confused about whether or not they might actually have a soul. And if they did have some kind of soul, maybe it was demonic, because only God can really imbue something with a true creative spirit. Right. So there's a funny story of an automaton that could play the flute. The story might be apocryphal. This is in the 1700s, that the French Inquisition was so worried about this device, it was just a clockwork mechanism which could play the flute, that they put it on trial to see if to try to get it to reveal that it was some satanic or demonic force inside. Oh, because of
how interesting
that notion again of what is often referred to as the uncanny valley, which is this sense of something that feels like it has some attributes of the human, but something about it is off just enough that it makes us feel a little bit uncomfortable or a little bit chilled.
Yeah.
And so we want to interrogate it in that way to see what is it really.
And I think getting back to ChatGPT, everybody who is of our generation, you know, who grew up in 60s, 70s, has the baggage, the framework of 2001, A Space Odyssey, right? With Hal at the computer.
That's right, exactly.
And we've all grown up with that as part of our culture. And so it just feels closer and closer to Hal. And so I think that spooks some of us. Right. What about the voicemails from the dead? That was a new one that I read. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this woman, Donna Hogan, she's a lovely woman who is one of the preeminent sort of investigators of what we call electronic voice phenomena, which is, again, part of this idea of trying to listen or communicate with spirits over electronic audio devices of some kind. And her story was that her brother-in-law was sadly killed in a car accident. And she was spending many days with her sister and supporting her and the family. And when she came home, there was a voicemail left days after he had passed away. It sounded as if it was from him trying to communicate with her. And that was her first experience with electronic voice phenomena. And at the time, she had contacted the phone company to see if there was a glitch in when it said the time stamp was for the recording, but they said that that is impossible, that the time stamp was correct. And it set her off on this journey of
what did he say?
I don't quite recall. I'd have to look, but just, you know, sort of calling her name. And then it got sort of another line came in and got it mixed up. It was like a normal voicemail had come in and the spirit had used that as kind of a method or a channel through which to communicate. There's this really interesting idea that Donna has, which is that if you think about a spirit of the dead, they are what she calls a disembodied consciousness. So they don't have vocal cords. They don't have mouths with which to form words. So they rely on technology to be able to kind of manipulate radio waves or say a voicemail message or other electronic devices.
Lights flashing, things like that.
Yeah, but specifically in the world of audio, right? To be able to manipulate something like a voicemail message to be able to communicate with us.
Oh, so fun. Well, you know, I think the heart of both the book, Season of the Witch and Strange Frequencies, is that there's a lot more under our culture that is occult-based than we ever guessed.
Yes, that's
that,
right.
That has formed our society. God, you know, I really do want to have a show just on the music thing, but, you know, I know you have talked about how Elvis was inspired by hoodoo. Everyone, of course, knows the mysticism around George Harrison, the occult background in Led Zeppelin. I was surprised to read that there's Masonic imagery in hip hop that you've identified.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so it's really a key ingredient behind so much music.
Yes.
It makes me think that some of the crazy fundamentalists who have persecuted rock and roll might not have been entirely wrong.
No, absolutely not. I mean, certainly those things are there. What I don't think is that there's a vast satanic conspiracy to infect the minds of our children, right? It's, you know, young musicians who feel in many ways connected to ideas that are outside of the mainstream, spiritual ideas that are outside of the mainstream, because their own art and music is something that is pushing up against the boundaries of what we might consider normative ways of doing things. And so it's all of a piece, it's all of a way of understanding yourself and your music and your art.
Yeah.
This kind of rebel, you know, a spiritual rebellion makes sense for a rock and roll rebel in terms of thinking about how they want to understand their own spiritual life. And so occult ideas, which for all intent and purposes over throughout history have been considered either heretical or outside of mainstream religious traditions, of course those are going to be the ideas and images that and symbols that will sort of feel personal and resonate for you if the music and the art that you're making is something like that. And so I think some musicians and bands have maybe used it in kind of a cynical way, just throw the upside down pentagram on the album cover because it looks cool. Or you have somebody like David Bowie, who was really, I think, deeply personally interested in how his music itself was a form of magic and could transform culture and transform himself into these different personalities, into these different characters. And so, you know, there is definitely a large playing field for how these ideas and symbols can be used by musicians and artists.
Well, gosh, you know, I think if anything, your work shows that just by being in our culture, everyone has a level of spirituality, even if they're not entirely conscious of it, that there's the stuff all around us that's affecting us. Yeah,
that's right. I mean, we're really talking about the religious imagination at the highest level, and the occult imagination is really just a subset of that. It's not really that different. It's not opposed to it. It's a part of it.
Sure. Well, Peter Biebergall, I'm so happy to have you. Your books can be found on Amazon and I'm sure other places. How could someone reach you if they wanted to connect?
They can find me on Instagram and I think you can even find other email contacts for me in any of those profiles if somebody wants to contact me directly.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for talking to Mystic Fix, and I hope to talk to you
again. Really great to be here and to talk to you. Thanks, Julie.
Take care.
If you'd like to be one of our free tarot card readings in the third segment, you can register for our giveaway on mysticfix.com. Coming up, more free tarot card readings. You're listening to Mystic Fix on News Talk STL 101.9 and 94.1.
This is Mystic Fix with Julia Gordon Bramer on News Talk STL.
Our spiritual journey tonight will begin.
Can't outrun your fate.
Let me tell you about you.
I know who you are, what you are, and why you have come.
Take a good look at these cards, young man. They contain all the secrets of the universe.
What does it say?
Leah in the studio would like to ask a question.
So I don't know if you do this, but this is more of like a way down the road type of thing.
Okay.
Like I've been... So, like, I love working in radio, and I want to keep doing it as long as I can, but, like, my big dream, like, goal, and it keeps coming up recently where I keep, you know, thinking about it, and I'm like, yeah, I still want to do it. I love it. So, as you know, I'm, like, big into CrossFit and all that, and so CrossFit has its own company, and I, like, my dream is to work on their media team one day.
Oh, cool.
So, like, you know, video the CrossFit games or the big competitions that they have, and... Yeah, my parents think I would be great for it. They think they see it in my future, you know, traveling and being a part of like CrossFit, like the company, yeah, and being on their media team and stuff like that. So I just want to see if.
Okay, as you know, I've been following you on Instagram, yeah, so I know you're all about,
yeah,
that. Yeah. Okay, let me take a look here.
My fingers are crossed.
No pun intended, right?
Yeah.
CrossFit, cross.
Yeah.
You can do this, Leah. Oh,
I have no doubt I can do it. I know it's going to
You be. Can do it with justice. It's right for you. Justice is also contracts. And I see it being offered to you if you put yourself there.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, this can totally happen for you.
Oh, wow.
So it looks like a bittersweet thing for you with the Three of Cups in reverse. I mean, obviously, you'd probably have to leave here.
Yes.
And
why it's a down the road. You know,
But you've got all the experience with the Six of Cups. It's funny because with the Knight of Wands in reverse, this tends to be erratic energy. So I'm not seeing you at the moment, at least, consistently putting energy toward this dream.
That's true.
But I would say... You do it.
My focus is here right now. So
yeah, and you probably only have time to focus here with,
yeah,
doing five shows. Yeah, but the Three of Pentacles is contracts, commitments, and this is about meeting the requirements because it's upside down. You just haven't put yourself out there yet to do that. But I just feel like you present yourself to them, you tell them what you want to do, and they're like, yes. It's that easy. It's a shared dream.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So cool.
So there you have it.
This July, I'll also be reading cards at the Illuminate Festival in Ocean City, Maryland on July 29th. If you've never been to an Illuminate Festival, they are all over the United States, and you can learn more at illuminatefestivals.com. Before we go, I want to thank our sponsor, CommaFlight. A couple weeks ago, I got to work at a party that was pretty much the party of the century in Miami, and I met Matt, a CommaFlight instructor. I told him that I'd seen those Miami models in the Instagram videos, and I felt that I was probably too old or too fat. He assured me that it's a very personal, adaptable, individual thing, and anyone who, with any reasonable level of fitness can participate. He even volunteered to fly me one day. So... I know that when I can get down to the Chosen Retreat Center in Sebastian, Florida, I am going to try it. Deepening intimacy through somatic movement, CommaFlight distills and blends the dynamism of contact improv, the serene flow of Watsu, the deep tissue release of Thai massage, and the exhilaration of acro yoga.
CommaFlight comprises a new modality for reanimating the body. Visit at CommaFlight, that's CammaFlight, on Instagram for videos, links, and more information. So glad you could join us for another episode of Mystic Fix. If this is your kind of programming, please like and subscribe to the videocast or podcast. Subscriptions get us found in searches, and it really helps. You're listening to Mystic Fix on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL, and I'm Julia Gordon-Bramer. Until next time.